Blog Talk Radio.
No matter how hard you try, you can't.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is TPU Radio for Sunday, May 20th, 2007. I am your host, Jason Easley, and for the next hour, we will be going on a fantastic voyage to the current events of the day. Today's show is really, really heavy with some big news. We're going to talk about the U.S. Embassy in Iraq. We're going to talk about the debate, the GOP debate last week. We're going to talk about Ron Paul. We're going to talk about why Fox News hates Ron Paul. We're going to talk about immigration reform. But before we can talk about any of these exciting topics, I must bring in my two distinguished friends and co-hosts, George and Will. George.
Yes, hello, Jason.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing quite well,
Well, yeah, because you're going to be a big radio star.
Well, I wouldn't say a big radio star. I will be making an appearance on the radio. This is, you know, but that'll be for the cheap plugs later on.
Yeah, we'll say that. I got to bring in Will right now, so let's save the cheap plug for a little while. Will.
Hello.
Hi, Will.
Hi.
How are you today, Will?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. Will, say hi to George.
Hi, George.
Hello, Will.
Now that everybody knows each other, let's dive right into this mother. Okay, George, did you watch the debate this week?
I would love to say I did, but unfortunately I was not able to.
Did you hear about the debate this week?
I did, yes. That I did. You know,
did
like
you,
I heard that
the,
I heard that Fox News basically just kind of, you know, discarded Ron Paul. You know, like I think discarded would be a better way, a good word to put it.
Yeah, they sort of threw Ron Paul under. Since they didn't have a Democrat to pick on, they anointed Ron Paul their token Democrat.
Well, they seem to pick on the people that seem to make the most sense.
Yeah.
So this is relatively par for the course.
Is this surprising for Fox News, though?
What's that?
Is this really surprising for the way they do business over there?
Oh God, no!
No. It's typical of them.
They eat their own young. You know, like this. It's just what they do.
So George, did you get to like check out any of it, or did you just kind of check out a little bit on the news?
What's that?
Did you get to check out much of the debate at all, or did you get to kind of see it on the news? And
I was only able to see it on the news this week. It's been a very busy week.
Well, I know you were able for some reason. The Fox News player had a JavaScript error that they never fixed for the debate. Nobody can really view it on their website where the debate video is, which I think is intentional.
Mm-hmm.
I think they just decided they probably have a giant NSA database, and they probably looked at every Democrat trying to log in and went, oh no, watch this. Why don't you just go back to MSNBC and CNN, you hippie liberal scum? A couple of things really, really jumped out at me about this debate. One, I don't watch much Fox News. I'll be honest. I don't watch part of any cable news at all.
I just watch it when I need a good laugh.
I was a little shocked at how leading these questions were. There were some very leading questions in this debate, and you could tell they were clearly playing favorites. Now, I have some of the questions. This is for Stan Brownback because he opposed the troop surge. Mm-hmm. The question was, is that any way to fight and win a war to look for a consensus among the politicians in Washington?
Is that any way to fight and win a war? Oh, man.
To look for a consensus from the politicians in Washington. Okay, that's a little
They're basically saying, like, Mr. Brownback, why do you hate America?
Yeah. Oh, but here's one for John McCain. You opposed the Bush tax cuts of 2001. Now you say you were wrong. How can you convince Republican voters you will push the Democratic Congress hard enough to make those tax cuts permanent, sir?
And this is fair and balanced?
This is the question. These are the neutral moderators of the Fox debate.
Oh, yeah, they were being set up. I mean...
Oh, here's another one for Sam Brownback. This was a softball probably to make up for calling him an American earlier. Senator Brownback, gasoline prices headed north again. Should Americans resign themselves to living with $3.50, $4, or $5 a gallon of gasoline?
Oh, man.
What do you think he's going to say? Oh, he's going to say, yep, we're all screwed. Break out the wallet.
Right.
You guys are going to have to work extra hours, so get used to it.
Yeah.
Remember that minimum wage job? You're going to need three of them now just to get to work. Yeah, he's not going to say that. Oh, here's one. Here's one for Rudy Giuliani. Now, this was about as tough as a gun on Rudy.
Yeah.
Chris Wallace asked, you're pro-choice, you're pro-gay rights, you're pro-gun control. You supported Mario Cuomo for governor over a Republican. Are those the stands of a conservative? Ooh. Wow. He's going to say, why, no, they aren't. I'm a Democrat. Vote Hillary. Of course he's going to say they're the same as a conservative. He's at the Republican debate. Okay, here was one from Mitt Romney. Governor Romney, in 1994, you said you were a stronger advocate of gay rights than Ted Kennedy. As recently as 5 years ago, you still supported a woman's right to choose. And as governor, you signed into law one of the toughest restrictions on assault weapons in the country. Are you a clear and consistent conservative?
Oh.
They just gave you... Chris Wallace just prefaced the question with four lines of discriminatory lead up, and then he asked him if he's a conservative. Now, you guys probably heard about the Ron Paul exchange. They went back to Sam Brownback and nailed him one more time. I got this off to you for you, too. You say that you're a full-scale Ronald Reagan Republican. God bless America. And yet, as you mentioned, you oppose the troop surge and you support comprehensive immigration reform. Are those the stands Ronald Reagan would take?
I would say I'm shocked if I didn't know how Fox News operates.
Yeah.
But this is hysterical.
But
they have
like,
people actually, and the conservative bloggers of the world here are saying these were great questions, so much better than anything.
Yeah.
Sorry guys.
Was that on the Newsmax blog? What was this? You know, like,
yeah, that was on Newsmax and also Newsbusters and a whole bunch of other places. I got to admit, they didn't ask a question of, like, what don't you like about America? So in that respect, this was a whole intellectual leap.
Oh, man.
But, I mean, it was clear that the Fox News people picked their favorites for this debate.
Right.
And they tilted all their coverage towards McCain, Giuliani, and Romney, and everybody else pretty much got shoved out the door.
Well, they basically,
I mean,
they're kind of like the way that the studios operate right now. It's just like, okay, what has a current fan base?
Yeah.
Like, okay,
yeah.
Let's play to that. Let's not
what are the current trends of the market?
Right, let's not be trendsetters and try to build something that people can really get behind. Let's just go ahead and just latch on to what, you know, like people are already kind of thinking about, you know. And
I'm not so sure if you gentlemen were aware, but they ended the debate with a hypothetical 24-like scenario.
Oh, boy.
Each of the candidates...
To be continued.
Each of the candidates were president, okay? Mm-hmm. And they had a terrorist attack that occurred in three different cities, that they had captured two of the terrorists. And they had information there was a fourth attack was going to occur. And the question was essentially, would you do whatever it took to get the information out of these people to prevent the fourth attack? And John McCain said, this is completely unrealistic. There's a 1 in a million chance this would ever happen. And then he said, I would not torture
Kiefer.
People. And then he said, I would not torture people. And then all the other Republicans went, ooh, if it would save American lives, I would use enhanced detention interrogation techniques. Do you guys know what enhanced interrogation techniques are?
Torture?
Yes! So everyone, and then I was like sitting here going,
what is torture, Alex?
They went back to McCain, and McCain said, well, I do believe enhanced interrogation techniques are torture. They went back thinking, the man spent, what, 5 years in a Viet Cong prison camp. You shouldn't jump on him for being anti-torture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If there's one person
he
you should listen to
it.
About torture... Yes,
that's pretty much like the only thing that he's got going for him right now is just like the fact that you know that he knows what he's talking about when it comes to that sort of stuff more than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, and McCain distanced himself too because he did support real immigration reform. He did support campaign finance reform and stem cell research. I mean, if you watched the first debate and you saw a really terrible John McCain, this was a lot better. I mean, somebody talked to him about his body language. His body language was not so angry and aggressive.
Right.
And that's a big part of it. I mean, McCain just really, really looked angry in that debate.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
The
first one, yeah.
The gun.
Well, except when he smiled after he said he would follow Bin Laden to the gates of hell.
That was sort of an evil smile. That was like Dr. Evil. You know? I'm going to follow Bin Laden to the gates. Yeah, waiting for the demonic laugh afterwards. Okay, let's talk about what happened to poor Ron Paul. Ron Paul had the stupid, who had the obviously stupidity, but he had the nerve to go on into a Fox News debate.
Mm-hmm.
And try to be rational.
Right.
Try to make sense and try to express a true conservative view.
No wonder they dismissed them. They had no idea what the hell that was.
Well, they asked them about America. They asked them about the 9/11 attacks. And he said that they talk about his non-intervention policy. Now, I'll give you the quote. He said, non-intervention was a major contributing factor. Have you ever read the reasons they attacked us? They attack us because we've been over there. We've been bombing Iraq for 10 years. We've been in the Middle East. I think Reagan was right. We don't understand the irrationality of Middle Eastern politics. So right now we're building an embassy in Iraq that's bigger than the Vatican. We're building 14 permanent bases. What would we say if China was doing this in our country or in the Gulf of Mexico?
Right, and then they went ahead and reworded it by saying that rewording what he said by saying that we had it coming.
Well, we need. He also said we need to look at what we do from the perspective of what would happen if somebody else did it to us. And then one of the moderators said, are you suggesting we invited the 9/11 attacks there? Once again, leading question.
Mm-hmm.
Then Ron Paul said, I'm suggesting that we listen to the people who attacked us and the reason why they did it. And they're delighted that we're over there because Bin Laden has said, I'm glad you're in RCM because we can target you so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
They have already now, since that time, have killed 3,400 of our men, and I don't think that was necessary. Okay, then Rudy jumps in and says, may I comment on that?
Right.
This is really an extraordinary statement. That's an extraordinary statement. As somebody who lived through the attack of September 11th, that we invited the attack because we were attacking Iraq, I don't think I've heard that before, and I've heard some pretty absurd explanations for September 11th. And I would ask the congressman to withdraw the comment and tell us that he really didn't mean that. And Paul went on to say, they don't come here to attack us because we're rich and we're free. They come and they attack because we're over there. I mean, what would we think if other foreign countries were doing that? They were doing that to us. This is the debate that got so much attention. And this, in the microcosm, was Rudy Giuliani's debate. He was mentioning 9/11 and at every moment.
Mm-hmm.
Every
That's all he really had to 9/11. Go by. I mean, like, but at the same time, though, he had done some, you know, like over here in New York and everything, he had done some very good things in terms of cleaning up the city. But at the same time, like, that doesn't translate very well in the red state areas.
No, and I mean, like, no, and what does it have to do with terrorism? And the point is, Republicans refuse to acknowledge that the roots of all the Islamic hatred stem down to U.S. foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Is about 75%, maybe 50-75% of the hatred that they have for us. I mean, the other part, when you get into extremists like Bin Laden, they want to take the world back to the 7th century. So they're going to hate progress. They're going to hate institutionalized governments, whether they be Muslim, secular, Western, Eastern, it doesn't matter. But a lot of the reason why he was able to build al-Qaeda was because a lot of people in the Arab world are resentful of our foreign policy actions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's if you read what the CIA wrote, if you read like the 9/11 Commission, if you read the National Intelligence Estimates, that's what they say. So for Rudy Giuliani to call that absurd is unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make sense. I mean, Rudy, and then oh, I'll get into this later, George, about how I got a whopping 40 emails in a day about my comments.
What's
about
that?
After the debate? I got a whopping 40 emails.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get into that later. Mm-hmm. And then Tancredo, this is what kind of got the emails going. Tancredo, a little while later, they got on the topic of global warming, and Tancredo jumps in and goes, "Although my dear friend Ron here, who I dearly love and really respect, I'll tell you that I disagree with you, Ron, about the issue of whether or not, whether Israel existed or didn't, whether or not we were in Iraq or not, they would be trying to kill us because it's a dictate of their religion, at least a part of it, and we have to defend ourselves." So Tancredo apparently suggested that all Muslims are taught to kill Americans.
By the way,
the Quran.
By the way,
oh, go ahead, Will. Here it comes.
Anyone who wants to call in and join in the discussion, just dial 718-664-6734, or you can AOL instant message us at CABJ71. Station break.
No. I'm looking at the clock going, okay, it's coming. But yeah, you know, that's what provoked this rabid email response was, I pointed out that not all people of the Islamic faith want to kill Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not a bad point to make. All Islamic people want to kill Americans. What's wrong with me? I need to go read the Quran, which I have. And and then I would email these people back like, I've read it, have you? And then they'd send me the jihadist verses from the Quran.
Right.
You know,
which is always the best thing to go by. See, I personally like to quote the King James Bible when I'm talking about, you know, like the most compassionate element in the Catholic
faith. I like to quote the Old Testament. When I want to hate on some gay people, I whip out the Old Testament.
Right.
It's the same thing. Like I could put out a billion quotes from any religious text that will make the religion look evil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just because religious texts are written in a broad way.
It's cherry picking.
So they're widely open to interpretation.
It's just cherry picking.
Yeah, it's
to make it to fit your own point of view.
But then, all like 35 of these 40 emails that I got, none of them mentioned the debate. And I thought, well, that's a little strange because I write a politics column.
Right.
And so
I
started emailing them back and asking them, did you actually read the whole column? Because let's be honest, if they're not talking about the debate, they're picking out three sentences that I mentioned about Tancredo describing all Islamists as bloodthirsty, crazy people. It makes me wonder if somebody just didn't post the comment somewhere, and then I got a flood of email. So I was like, well, maybe that's possible. But then people are like, I did read the column, and it was pretty well written. And I'm like, well, then why?
Yeah.
But no, I got all these emails about people, and some of these emails were really thoughtful. They were good emails, but I write a politics column. I don't care. You know, I'm not a theologian. I don't want to have a theological discussion. But my concern about Marxist and Tancredo's is very simply, if you believe this, what's the future of U.S. foreign policy then? Are we going to have to fight for the next 1,000 years? Are we going to engage in a holy war? I'm asking you guys, if you believe that all Islamic people want to kill Americans,
we're basically kind of playing into their hands by saying it like that. They
right.
want another crusade.
Right.
That's what they want
yeah.
because then all of a sudden they can say, you know, God is on our side, and then all of a sudden, no matter what, you know, like no matter what other Islamic American, you know, what other, you know, like Islamics may believe about America, they're crusading. You know, all of a sudden we have crusaders that are going against Islam,
right?
And that's all of a sudden that's going to bring out, you know, like so many more people to their side.
Mm-hmm.
Did that frighten either of you?
You're just stooping down to their level.
Right.
Well, it's setting up an infinite holy war, and it's just you can't govern your foreign policy that way with stupid generalizations. I mean,
it doesn't really help that we have a born again Christian in the White House.
What's that?
It doesn't help much that we have a born again Christian in the White House.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem is, I mean, and the thing is with these emails I got, I didn't get a single email from a person of the Islamic faith telling me I got their religion wrong. I didn't get an email from a single Muslim telling me, hey, you really blew it. All these emails were from, you know, good American-sounding name people. And they were from a lot of armchair theologians who have read a few verses of the Quran and freaked themselves out. And I was like, Okay, if you really want to believe that, you're entitled to believe that, but look at the implications for down the road.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Look at where that belief leads you. And it leads you to a very, very ugly place.
Yeah.
So basically, Ron Paul, and then if you guys have a chance, if anybody out there has a chance, go on YouTube, look up Hannity and Ron Paul for the post-debate interview. And Hannity went after Ron Paul and called him an American. Did his whole Hannity shtick, saying that Ron Paul blames America for 9/11.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
This is so sad.
Defending himself the best he could. I mean, but he's trying to maintain a level of decorum. You know, he doesn't want to stoop to Hannity's level as a presidential candidate.
What's funny? All Ron Paul needs to do is switch sides.
Yeah.
And he will become like the looking like a conquering hero.
Yeah, you know what's funny?
If we put
Ron Paul and Mike Gravel together on an independent ticket.
Oh, there was a landslide. There was
one more Democrat in the Congress.
Yeah.
Yeah, one more Democrat in the Congress.
So much for the veto.
The thing where I disagree with Paul is he believes in a complete non-interventionist foreign policy. And you can't have that either. You know what I mean? We can't turn back the clans of time to like 150 years ago or 100 years ago and just pretend like there's nothing going on outside of our own borders.
Right.
Right.
So, I mean, but as debate winners and losers, in my column I put Paul as a winner, Gilmore as a winner, because Gilmore actually named names and called some people out on being the liberal, the top three, and Fox News goaded him to, and he didn't want to at first. Then he actually attached names to all his criticisms on their positions, which then spurred, like, more, you know, anger. Huckabee I put in the winner circle, because Huckabee at least, we knew he was there this time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And McCain, because McCain had a much better performance. I thought Giuliani, I mean, there's the latest polls are showing that Rudy was hanging at 7 before the debate, and after the debate he dropped to like a two-point lead over McCain. It's a death by a thousand cuts. No matter how much he tries to invoke 9/11 and wave the flag above America, conservatives look at his pro-abortion, pro-gun, or anti-gun, pro-gay marriage platform, and they just go, no thanks.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah, we have about 8 minutes till the news. Did you guys check out the immigration reform agreement that was come to?
A little bit.
I did get to look at it a little bit, yeah.
Now, what do you guys think about immigration as a problem? Now, we all live in the Northeast. We don't have a really big immigration problem.
Well, they're flooding in here, so.
They're flooding in here. Not right around here.
Well, there are some around here.
But, I mean, well, compare it to Texas area.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what
Compare
it to the southern border states. It's not even close. Right now, immigrants are coming into, like, our area because we have jobs that need filled. Yeah, I mean, so the immigration reform, it seems that nobody's happy with this bill. Nobody's happy with this agreement at all. Now, do you think, here's a Fox News leading question for you. Do you think that the agreement as constituted with illegal immigrants being able to pay a $5,000 fine and fees and get a Z visa, do you think that's going to solve anything?
I personally don't think so, and I think that was something that really kind of stuck out at me. It was just like, okay, people are saying that they're basically going to be basically forgiving people for previous crimes and everything, and it's just like that's kind of like what it sounds like they're doing, and
yeah,
I'm really kind of irked about that because it was just like, okay, all you have to say is that you committed a crime. If somebody wants citizenship bad enough, they're going to say they committed a crime, whether they did or not. If they have the means to go ahead and pay that fine,
right?
Then they're just going to go ahead and do it.
The issue is though, how many illegal immigrants currently have $5,000 to pay the fine and get the visa?
Exactly.
Just sitting around. That's the really big problem here. I mean. And then the second part of this, the big part that has liberals outraged, is the fact that they changed the system to a point system now, and family ties will not matter as much when weighing entry into the country as education, skill level, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying it's going to break up families and cause families to be in disrepair. Because if you go to apply, if you're from outside the country but you don't have necessary skills or anything, they're going to turn you down whether or not your family's here in the United States.
Well,
and that's something that liberals
outrage. Like, it's basically kind of like a mass asking.
Yeah, and Europe already does this. I mean, people, liberal groups here are outraged about this, but Europe already does this.
Mm-hmm.
The places in Europe with strict immigration quotas is really, really try to single out skilled workers, and that's
mm-hmm.
who they want to let in first.
Well, yeah.
My problem with this bill is that it just won't work. They talk about building the big fence. They don't, the agreement, as I've seen, doesn't really contain any specific enforcement measures or penalties against employers who hire illegal aliens.
That big fence thing always kills me.
Yeah.
It was just like, what exactly is that going to do? All it's going to do is just give them just one other little obstacle to go through.
Yeah, because they've been
going to do, they're going to go under it or they're going
to
go around.
Well, they've been noted to go underground in tunnels, so.
Yeah.
Well, see, here's the problem. If you're not going to take away the incentive for employers to hire illegal immigrants, it's a push-pull factor. Immigrants from poorer countries are pulled to the United States because of little jobs. They're pushed out of their home country, say Mexico, because of the poor economy. Now, if you want to really address the immigration problem, you need to cut off the push-pull. You need to help boost the Mexican economy and make
right.
it hard or almost impossible for them to obtain jobs here in America. But the big businesses who depend on immigrant labor, farmers, and especially the hotel industry, do not want a strict immigration reform. So they basically are not going to beef up the penalties. They're not really going to change anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going to build the big fence. They're going to come up with the electronic ID card that they've come up with for this. I find that scary. I don't want to have to carry an electronic ID card.
Right. I mean, this
is it's going to start with illegal immigrants. But if there's another terror attack or something, you watch. They'll look to expand the program. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I just know how government programs work, and once they get in the door.
It does have kind of a New World Order kind of sound to it.
Yeah, but there's no turning back on this. And, I mean, I don't know. I think for citizens, your Social Security card is enough. Why do we need to create another federal bureaucracy?
Right.
Right.
You know, for illegal immigrants, I believe that there should be an electronic system to the point where if you take away an employer's ability to hire an illegal immigrant, and you put serious fines and jail time in there, and then if immigrants have to carry some sort of electronic ID card that they have to show to an employer, and an employer has to check on a database real quick to make sure the person is who they are and everything's okay, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I don't like the idea of government data collection. I don't like the warrantless wiretapping. I don't, you know what I mean? I'm not a big favorite of domestic spying. I'm not a big fan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that if it starts with illegal immigrants, that's fine, but you have to make sure in legislation that it ends there.
Right.
So there's no more excuses. Because do we really need it? I mean, we already have to carry our passport starting next year when we're going to leave the country anywhere. Do we really need another system? And that's what you have to ask.
Right.
But losers on the debate, I thought Giuliani was horrible. As usual, he just every time he talks in these kind of settings, he's hurting himself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Thompson did look at the camera, but he chose not to answer the questions.
which doesn't really work too well in a debate.
Right.
We make a little progress with Tommy. Apparently somebody got him the podcast of our show where we begged him to look at the camera when he was talking.
Right.
Right.
He did that. But now he decided he just didn't like, because they gave him a question, if you were president, what three wasteful federal departments or programs would you cut? He didn't answer it. He started talking about something completely different, and then the moderator went, you didn't answer my question. Can you think of one federal program you'd cut? And he didn't answer it. and then Ron Paul said, God bless his crazy little heart, mm-hmm. he would cut the Department of Education, the Department of Energy, which are two traditional conservative favorites to cut, and he would cut the Department of Homeland Security. Oh, my God.
That is fantastic. He really needs to switch sides. We have to recruit him.
I'm laying on my chaise lounge watching the debate, and I literally almost fell off the couch. Oh, my God, he's on Fox News, and he just said he would cut the Department of Homeland Security.
Oh, man.
Here it comes. here it comes.
Yep.
Wait for it. You know, and that's what's, and that happened earlier in the debate, and that's what set up the Ron Paul blames America for 9/11 rhetoric. You know what? I could probably, I like Ron Paul just as a real conservative and somebody who's trying to tell the truth.
Right.
But let's face it, Fox News is going to try to push Ron Paul out of these debates as soon as they can.
Exactly.
Make their pseudo Republicans look bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're gonna tell him, you are the strongest link. Goodbye.
You make sense. We cannot have that gun party. Please leave now.
I'm sorry,
okay,
it's not fair and balanced enough.
It is 2:00, gentlemen. We know what it's time for now.
Mm-hmm.
Will,
dun, dun,
do you want music? Yeah, do you want your music, Will?
Why not?
Go to the news.
Oh,
really?
Do you want me to just go to the news? I'll just go to the news.
Well, Will, I just hit the button for the news theme.
Cool.
Yeah, this is professionalism at its finest. Here we go.
The Political Universe time is 2 p.m. Now here is the news. While promoting his audiobook series, Sunday Mornings in Plains, former President Jimmy Carter lashed out at the Bush administration by calling it the, quote, worst in history, end quote, in terms of its policies on foreign affairs. This is according to a story that ran on Saturday in the Arkansas Democratic Gazette. He went on to say that, quote, the overt reversal of America's basic values as expressed by previous administrations, including those of George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon and others, has been most disturbing to me. We have now endorsed the concept of preemptive war, where we go to war with another nation militarily, even though our own security is not directly threatened. If we want to change the regime there, or if we fear that sometime in the future our security might be endangered, end quote. RNC spokeswoman Amber Wilkerson replied by saying that it was not hard to not take the 39th President of the United States comments act acutely, since he took issue with former President Reagan's policies on the Cold War. On Saturday, according to a press release from Ralph G. Neese, President of the People for the American Way, Senator Schumer and Feinstein called for the Senate to formally express its lack of confidence in Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. In the letter, the organization's president, Ralph Neese, said, quote, on behalf of more than 40,000 Americans who have signed our petition calling for Alberto Gonzalez to resign or be removed, I applaud Senator Schumer and Feinstein and urge the Senate to pass a resolution of no confidence with all deliberate speed, end quote. He went on to say that, quote, since he came to Washington with George Bush 6 years ago, Alberto Gonzalez has shown a slavish devotion to advocating for the political and ideological interests of the president, regardless of the law or of any higher moral obligations. This week's bizarre revelations of his late-night visit to John Ashcroft's hospital bed should be the last straw, end quote. June 30th, 2007 will be the last day of work as World Bank president for Paul Wolfowitz. The former presidential aide finally agreed to step down after pressure from European nations because of a conflict of interest for giving his girlfriend, who worked at the World Bank, a raise. Former Nobel Prize winner and chief economist at the World Bank, Joseph Stiglitz, said that outgoing Prime Minister Tony Blair is being considered to replace Wolfowitz. In other news, for all you Trekkies out there, the remains of James Doohan, who played Mr. Scott on Star Trek, were found in New Mexico. And there were two notable deaths this week. First, the eldest daughter of the late civil rights activist Martin Luther King Jr. died Tuesday. Yolanda King died at the age of 51 in Santa Monica, California. A spokesman for the Martin Luther King Jr. Center said the family is not sure what the cause of death was, but think it was a heart-related problem. Also, notably, the Reverend Jerry Falwell passed away on Tuesday, and he was 73. And you are listening to The Political Universe here on Blog Talk Radio. Now back to Jason Easley.
Hello.
Hello.
Jason?
Well, let's continue with the show then. So where were we?
Well, I guess, you know, like, considering we were since you were talking about in the news before, you were talking about Reverend Jerry Falwell.
Right.
Yes. What was your reaction when you first heard that piece of news?
Well, I kind of, it was sad that he died.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he was a guy. I didn't agree with what a lot of he said because of his policies on stuff. But,
yeah.
But, you know, it's sad when anyone dies. But I disagreed with what he said, and I respected him for his opinions. What about you?
I was kind of indifferent to it. You know, like there was, you know, like obviously with a lot of cases, you want to feel sympathy for, you know, for the dying and everything. But at the same time, he was never really on my, you know, my good boy list.
Right.
But the fact that he went out and said what he said about, you know, like about 9/11,
mm-hmm.
was very much of like, okay, I'm done with you. You know, like I really don't care for you either way anymore. And
oh, geez.
and it seemed like there were a lot of people that agreed with me on that because it just is not much of a coincidence that after that happened, he just kind of stopped being relevant.
Right.
Okay, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
We're still on the air?
Yes,
we are.
That wasn't me. I'll tell you what happened. Will was doing his news, and all of a sudden I got this loud, high-pitched tone in my ear.
Hmm.
A screaming pitch tone in my ear, perhaps we call it, a shrill tone.
Yeah,
so
I waited
until the phone to go away, but it didn't. So I tried to call back in. Then all the circuits were busy, and I couldn't get through.
All the circuits were busy.
So,
oh, wow.
I finally just got back through. Something happened at Blog Talk Radio. I had a problem logging in today to host the show. I had to keep calling and calling and calling. So apparently they're having a bit of a technical issue here. Now, I take it you just finished the news a minute or two ago?
Yeah, and then we discussed
I was about
Jerry
to comment
Falwell.
On the news. I have no idea what you guys were talking about. I'm sorry to interrupt on my show. But all I heard was he's just not relevant, and I went, okay, that's probably talking about me because I'm not here.
we're talking about somebody else whose name starts with a J.
Yeah.
I hope these guys know that this is being recorded. I can listen to it later and hear what they said about me. Somebody else's name starts with a J. Jimmy Carter?
Nope.
Well, we did mention that in the news.
Yeah. So what were you guys talking about? Because I'll just chime in, too.
Oh, we just basically talked about Jerry Falwell, the other J.
Oh, Jerry Falwell. Falwell was irrelevant by the later days. I agree with George.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about what do you guys think about Jimmy Carter tearing George W. a new one?
I think Jimmy Carter was just like, thank God that he's in office, so I can just go ahead and, you know, like go off on him, make myself look better.
I'm off the hook.
My ratings are going up.
President. I'm off the hook as the worst president in the last 50 years.
Yeah.
Thank you, George.
I mean, also in Carter's defense, like he just happened to have gotten there at the worst possible time. Not only did he have to deal with a disgraced, you know, presidency with Watergate. Plus, he had, you know, like there was the end of the Vietnam War and everything when
the Iran hostage
when Nixon was there. But then you had an unelected president. God knows when the hell that happened last.
Right.
And,
that seems to happen about every 30 years.
Right. You know, like go in there in office and everything, and you know, basically, you know, he just looked at it like was looked at as the only. The best possible candidate because he had nothing to do with what happened in the previous administration.
Yeah.
But it just so happened that he inherited so much crap. He inherited a dwindling economy. He inherited, you know, like a whole lot of inflation. He inherited the tensions between, you know, like with that were going on at that point. And then all of a sudden, bam, the Iran the hostage crisis happens. And it just seemed like he was powerless to do anything about it.
I happen to think that if somebody's going to talk to a president about trouble in the Middle East and know what he's talking about, it's Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I mean, because he agonized through that hostage crisis in Iran.
Right.
Right.
He literally agonized every single day and did everything he could to get those hostages out. And people will say Ronald Reagan got them out, and that's why Ronald Reagan's a great man.
Whatever happened to arms for hostages?
We all know the Reagan campaign pretty much had a secret deal with the Khomeini to release the hostages right on Inauguration Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the Iranians had decided they weren't going to let Jimmy Carter win this one.
Yeah.
And I don't think it really mattered who the Republican was. They made sure that Jimmy Carter was going to get stuck with this and hurt by this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a personal thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that happens in international politics all the time. Grudges are held. You know, it's not like people are infallible.
It was kind of a personal aspect that got us into Iraq now.
Yeah.
You know, like with Bush looking at, you know, unfinished business.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you buy into that point of view that it was some in the administration view this as unfinished business, and that's why we went to Iraq?
Well, considering who's, you know, like who's in power and everything. Like, I mean, Dick Cheney, you know, being the vice president and everything. Then you have the son of the previous president that dealt with this.
Yeah.
It can't help but be just a little personal.
Did you ever think a president would come along that would make George H.W. Bush look good? And did you ever dream that it would be his son?
I'm an optimist. I believe that, you know, like that everybody has, you know, like has a right to have like their little moment in the sun and everything. But at the same time, it's just like, all right, you know, thanks a lot, Bush. You're on your own.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there quite possibly in history may have only been a couple other people that were ever as unqualified to be president as George W. Bush.
Well, it seems like, you know, like everybody says, you know, like everybody says how like history will judge, you know, like history will, you know, like will judge him in, you know, like 30, 50 years and everything. For me, it's just like the only thing history is going to judge Bush on positively was the fact that he threw a strike before Game 3 of the 2001 World Series. That's it.
I think the high watermark will be remembered as his speech, his little remark at Ground Zero to the rescue workers. That was the high watermark on November 11th.
Yeah.
And looking back, we didn't know, but at the time, that was it, and it was only going to go down from there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Jimmy Carter was actually right on, and he actually he broke with decades of tradition where ex-presidents kind of keep their personal opinion to themselves.
Right.
And
right.
How badly must you have to do for a Jimmy Carter to stand up and go, whoa, now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Carter's legitimately pissed. Carter's quote was that basically Bush has reversed the policy and doctrine in foreign affairs of the last five administrations.
Yeah.
Right. That's 20.
He said, you know, the policy went back to Nixon. Nixon, Ford, Reagan, Clinton. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be five administrations. I was actually just doing it off the top of my head. I didn't know if I would text you five. Congratulations. I can do math. that's about my extent of my math skills. And quite honestly, I was using my fingers. I won't lie to you. I was counting with my fingers while I was doing this. But I just believe that Carter, it's also, he sees an opening now. It can't really get worse for, I can never say it couldn't get worse for George W. Bush because, well, he could get shot, and then Dick Cheney would be president, and that would probably be worse for everybody.
Well, we kind of already saw that, we kind of already saw that scenario played out in the death of a president. Faux documentary.
Didn't you review that?
I did review it, and I gave it a positive review. Chad Webb did not agree with me when it came out on DVD, but, you know, like, it was
Chad,
definitely...
What does Chad Webb know?
Chad Webb
How many
friend,
radio shows has Chad Webb been invited on, huh?
Huh?
How many radio shows has Chad Webb ever been invited on?
Oh, I give props to Chad. Chad's a friend and everything, and I will, you know.
Well, I'm not saying you personally dislike him. I'm saying
plug.
He's wrong.
Yeah.
He's wrong and not as smart as you are.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that, but, you know, I'll stay modest on my
own. I look at George do the dance. Dance, George, dance.
And people say I don't know anything about politics. Come on.
I have nothing against Chad Webb. I read his stuff pretty regularly. It's good writing. He's probably a nice guy. I was just kidding.
Yeah.
Okay. I have no problem with Chad Webb.
Don't worry. I'm not gonna pull like a Sean Penn, you know, like at the Oscars and everything and say, you know, stand up for Jude Law and everything. Yeah. take a moment. But.
Yeah, but I just know that, like, sometimes when 401 people check into this, and I don't want, you know, somebody thinking that we have a net feud.
Right. You know, like, all I was basically saying was I gave one movie a positive review, and he disagreed with me. That's
Man,
pretty much
Monkey
it.
Dance. Oh, boy, that's
anyway,
my that's
anyway.
It's
anyway.
So much fun. Okay, now, speaking of idiots.
Yes.
Neither Chad Webb nor George, but the other George Bush.
Yeah.
Speaking of fools, let's talk about the new U.S. Embassy in Iraq for a minute, shall we?
Bigger than the Vatican?
You guys are familiar with this. It's a Vatican-sized embassy. 104-acre compound, which is going to open in September. It's cost $592 million. It's two-thirds of the size of the National Mall. It has
desk space
for 1,000 people behind blast-resistant walls.
Of course, we're going to be gone after a while.
It's a 21-building complex, and it's going to cost $1 billion a year to maintain.
Oh, man, you need that's a space shuttle every year.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Now,
and malls
now
anyway.
What's the problem with building a 104-acre embassy in the middle of Iraq?
Well, that kind of plays against the whole "we're going to be out before you know it," you know, kind of
exactly
kind of attitude.
Doesn't this just say that we're going to stay? A, we're going to stay there forever, and B, they must just put a giant target on the building,
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just inviting people to blow it up.
Well, considering the size of it, I think they can fit a target in the building. So,
I mean, I don't understand why you would build, especially like, and Condi Rice said, well. Those plans were made 3 years ago, and some things have changed on the ground in Iraq since then.
Yeah, it's going to be bigger.
Yeah.
Do you know what's changed in Iraq since then? They don't want us there.
Yeah, really.
They're still waiting for the moment when they're going to be when the Iraquis are going to be passing out flowers. You know, like they're still waiting
yeah,
for that moment.
We didn't know the flowers would come in the form of roadside bombs.
Right.
Don't worry. Right. The more they bomb us, the more they like us.
Yeah.
That seems to be the logic.
This is that whole, like, you know, like your mouth say no, but your eyes say yes.
Why would you build an embassy that would cost that much money?
Exactly.
And take up that much space? It's on prime real estate in Baghdad. I mean, they didn't put this out on the expressway somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is right in the heart of Baghdad. There was a political statement intended here, and it is that Iraq is the new outpost for democracy in the Middle East. And look at our big shiny building.
Didn't we already go into Saddam's big shiny building and you know like make off with a lot of stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've already done all.
What's to stop them from trying to do the
because,
same thing to us?
Yeah. This makes no sense. I mean, you look at it and you go, what? You're building a what? Where? People can't even walk the street safely. But you're building an embassy. How?
Yeah.
And this is safe. I mean, I wouldn't want to work there. Yeah, because let's face it, even if the building is bomb-proof, there are going to be snipers everywhere for people to go in and out of that place.
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to live in there?
That's what they said, essentially. They might have to actually house some of these people in there. So you not only work for the embassy, but you're a hostage in your own embassy.
Right.
You can't leave.
Tells you how safe it is.
I mean, yeah. Well, at least they'll have enough room. And they're 21 buildings and 104 acres.
Ugh.
I just, oh God, this is
the
so
last
stupid.
Thing we need in Iraq right now is stately Wayne Manor. You know, like that's
not
gonna work.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. We don't need a big shining signal that we're there.
Right.
You know, it's like what we need is to minimize our presence if we're going to be effective against the counterinsurgency. But you know. Hey,
wasn't the whole plan that's being put around now is just like to have special forces in there?
Yeah,
and that would
be
it.
That's what's being floated.
Yeah.
Just special forces units to go in and deal with insurgents, counterinsurgency campaigns.
Yeah.
One town at a time. I'm not sure. I think that idea would have worked at the beginning of the war.
Yeah.
I think the insurgency is so entrenched though now that I don't know if you're ever going to be able to get them out.
Yeah.
I think the Iraqis might have to get them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to have to come down to the fact where the Iraqis go do battle against them. And a lot of, most of the insurgents are Iraqis themselves, so if these people are happy, they're going to stop cooperating, and they're going to go back to their normal lives, and maybe Iraq can stabilize. I just don't, it doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? Now, granted, this time, oh, our Huckabee Award winner. I think, just hit me, I think we have our first two-time winner.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it should go to Sam Brownback this week for suggesting that if a woman is raped, she should be forced to have her baby, and abortion should not be an option.
Ugh.
Oh, man.
I actually put in a second nominee.
You have a nominee?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I have my nominee.
I nominate Chad Webb.
No. No, my Huckabee of the Week Award winner is Lieutenant General Douglas Lute, who accepted
the new war czar. Oh, that's almost Huckabee worthy right there, because what kind of president appoints a war czar who opposed the troop surge?
Right.
Well, what
whatever
you know,
he's dealing with.
But why would you appoint a war czar when the commander-in-chief is, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to get into that.
Go ahead. You got time. You got a few minutes.
Well,
all
it's just,
you want.
I don't understand why there should be a war czar when the commander-in-chief is the person to make those kinds of decisions. I mean, he's the civilian leader who's supposed to be, you know, coordinating all of them.
Well, this reminds me of an old TV show called The Fall Guy.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Whoever the war czar is going to be the fall guy.
Mm-hmm.
Look
and
out,
this,
you
and
majors,
that's why.
Here comes
that's
generation.
Why I'm picking this guy as you know, like as the Huckabee of the Week Award winner, because he should know better. He should know
exactly.
The fact that he is being set up to be the fall guy.
Nobody in
the policy failed. It's his fault.
Right.
I really, really thought that Dick Cheney was going to end up being named war czar.
No, that would require him to do work.
Yeah.
And he would have taken it as an actual position and tried to become czar of the country. Claimed that he escaped presidential power. He is now Czar Cheney.
This is basically like all I ever knew from politics I learned from Revenge of the Sith. You know, like,
don't even get going on Star Wars. Then we'll get going, you'll get going. Then
we'll yeah, we'll all get going on Star Wars.
you know, I just realized who Bush and Cheney remind me of. Last night, while laying in bed reading a book, I realized Bush and Cheney remind me of Pinky and the Brain.
Oh, my God.
What are we going to do today, Cheney? Narf? The same thing we do every day, Georgie. We're going to win the world.
To take over the world.
Hey, Brian.
We're Cheney and
Georgie and
George.
The dick?
One is evil, the other's insane. No, think about it. Even think about the physical description.
They even look
don't
like
them. Like, don't they look like Pinky?
Brain does have the same sort of forehead.
Yeah, and isn't George Bush kind of like the tall, skinny, dopey one?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
I just want to go up to him and just say, like, excuse me, Mr. President, can you just say, no?
Yeah, yeah. See, in the press conference, Bush will be like, I think we're making progress in Iraq. And they're looking up, NARF! Immigration reform is a good thing for America. NARF! Yeah, that, it just hit me. Like, I'm sitting there, I'm actually reading The Power Broker, the biography of Robert Moses. And this just popped into my head, which goes to show you how absolutely warped and twisted I really am. It came into my head out of nowhere. I wasn't watching Pinky and the Brain. I wasn't thinking about Bush and Cheney. It was just like, you know what? Bush and Cheney are Pinky and the Brain. America voted for Pinky and the Brain twice.
They were a popular show, so you're like,
what the hell? and I do this stuff every day, and I just realized it after 6.5 years. You know, it's like, sometimes you just look at things and you go, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
And that's just someday we're going to look back on the entire Bush presidency and shake our heads and go, what the hell? What were we thinking? And now Gore's going to be like, damn it, I knew I was going to be president. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was an article in Time magazine this past week that said that Al Gore is still playing with the idea of running in 2008.
Ooh.
For both of you gentlemen, good idea, bad idea. Well,
I think it's
good
think
idea,
it
bad idea for Al Gore to run.
Good idea.
Why?
Why? Well, he came close in the last time he ran, and I think this time he can actually pull it off.
Using that logic, Will, is the exact same reason why I continue to pursue women. I keep coming close. Next time, it might work out.
but seriously, I think that he has a lot. I think a lot of people who are choosing, you know, like Edwards, Obama, if Al Gore came into the race, I think that they would, you know, turn their votes over to Al Gore.
And what do you think this would do to Hillary if Al Gore jumped in?
Oh, it's going to be a vicious battle.
Should she be nervous if Al Gore jumped
yeah,
in?
Yeah, she should be very nervous. And it's going to be...
George, good idea, bad idea, George.
I'm starting to think it's like it's not... I think it's not the best idea to do it now. I think, like, if this was last year, then yeah. It would have been a great idea and everything. But at the same time, like all that this would be like the Democratic answer to Nixon, because Nixon lost very close to Kennedy,
mm-hmm.
and then he came back like a little bit later and won, and it was like he was basically just kind of pushing and everything just to get, you know, like not because he was the best person for the job, but because he felt he deserved it. That was the same sort of excuse that Bob Dole was trying to pull in 96.
Except Dole wasn't at anything.
Right, but at the same time, like he was basically saying that.
Yeah, do you think that would have pull with voters that Al Gore got robbed in 2000 and they wanted a makeup call, so to speak?
Oh yeah, you know, like it would work and everything, but at the same time, it's just like I'm not.
Do you
really
think
sure
that people would buy that as a chance to right a perceived wrong? You know, that Al Gore got screwed in 2000, so let's make sure it doesn't happen in 08 kind of deal. I I'm really divided on Al Gore running. I think that he's such a different person not in politics, but I have a strange feeling that if he would ever get back into politics, he would clam up again. He would become the stiff and rigid Gore.
He would become the guy who's playing not to lose, not the guy who's playing to win, which is what he is right now, and he's not even playing.
Right.
Yeah. By the way, I think Al has, if anyone should be the chairman of the Democratic Party, it's Al Gore. If you want somebody to come in and run the Democratic Party right, because let's face it, Howard Dean's just kind of bouncing around, criticizing things, having a good old time.
Right.
But he's not really organizing the party. Most of the party organization is done by Chuck Schumer and Rahm Emanuel.
Mm-hmm.
They're the people that were responsible for the candidate field in 06 that won. So I think that it would be helpful. There needs to be a role for Al Gore. And I'm telling you what, if I was a Democrat and I won the presidency, my new Secretary of Energy would be Al Gore.
Wow.
Just turn Al Gore loose on global warming and energy issues.
That would be fantastic. That would be actually better.
See, but, you know, and then I really don't have to end every press conference with NARF.
Yeah.
Just so I connect with the American people.
Right.
But, you know, we're down to a couple minutes in the show. So, George, I know you want to plug something. We'll let you plug away.
Okay. I will be plugging I'll be plugging three different things. There is my scene anatomy this Wednesday, which will have me wrapping up my trilogy of threes. This Thursday is my UBS Evening News column on 411mania.com movies. And this Wednesday at 6 p.m.
Almost Chad Webb.
Yeah. This Wednesday at 6 p.m., I will be on WTBQ.com, which is also 11:10 a.m. on your radio dial for the Northern New Jersey and Orange County areas. I will be on the Aaron Brownstein Show. We will discuss both Scene Anatomy, and we will also discuss the current state of films that are going to be coming out this summer.
Wow, you're a big shot now, George. You're going to be too big for this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Is that everything?
Yes, that is everything.
Are you sure you have anything else to plug in there, too?
No,
and by the way, guys, go read all of Chad Webb's stuff. Chad Webb. That is Chadwebb. and, Will, you have nothing to promote.
That's right.
Will, you need to get a writing gig. Me, because if you want to email me, it's thepoliticaluniverse@yahoo.com. I don't want to talk about Islam. I don't care about religion. Let's talk politics. Columns run Tuesday and Friday. Forumania.com/politics. God, I almost believe in the web address. And I'm on the Blogger News Network. And please visit our MySpace page, myspace.com/politicaluniverseradio. There's fresh stories, there's news, there's all kinds of good stuff on there. That's a wrap for this week's show. For Will and our new superstar George, this is Jason Singh. We'll see you next Sunday at 1:30. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.